Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here this week. And today, I'm so, so excited. You talk about, with our show, we do talk about real estate and life and giving back and being people of change, right? Because we can all think about things or want to do things, but when we actually get involved and make change happen, that's incredible. And we can't do it alone. Today, oh my gosh, this, you talk about change. You know, look at some things and say, is this important? Is that important? You know, we talk about don't sweat the small stuff. And, wow, today we're going to talk about saving our planet. Now, how big can that be? That's huge, because without our planet, Mother Nature and our air and water and earth, we're not going to be here. We cease to exist. And then all those little things really do, the small things really do seem small, don't they? So I want to get started and turn it over quickly because we have so much to go over in this hour, and I'm so excited. And a little bit of a background, methane, CO2, and acids are accumulating in our oceans. Our forests are being depleted. Soils are being chemically destroyed. And what can we all do to help preserve our precious planet? You know, I don't want to sound negative. It's just reality, and we don't want to have the elephant in the room and ignore it, so because it's there. James Fowler and Ali Kalvati and YS have been on a mission, literally, to accomplish making differences. And James Fowler and Dr. Joseph Steyer, founders of the Green Sahara Project, and it's greensaharaproject.org, they have been doing a lot of work with forestry and replantation and getting the CO2 levels down. They'll go over some of that today. James Fowler has an extensive 20-plus years in the maritime industries. He's also an inventor with two inventions in progress, Eon Frequency Resonance Exchange, magnetic cohesion collection, electrical force delivery device. Ali Kalvati is an environmental and renewable energy manager at AMA. He has years, over 25, 30 plus years in this field. And YS as well has been in this for a long, long time, and he has connections all over the world, so he's actually putting people together to make this happen. And it's just incredible. It makes me think, wow, what do I do every day in real estate? It's like, is this, you know, but we all have our roles. And today we're going to talk about technology that is using coal as a fertilizer. The methodology is established and will one day replace NPK, which stands for nitrogen, phosphate, potassium type fertilizer that causes harm to our environment by leaching excess fertilizer out of the soils before they can be useful. Vital Grow, one of the products they're going to be talking about, and Ali studied this for well over 11 years. It'll show a better picture for all to have an all-purpose natural product. It actually stays put and over time is released. The next steps as a species to clean up our agricultural venue is coal-based fertilizer. And the Green Sahara Project outreach is to inform and educate our world's inhabitants of the real dangers we face and give viable answers and solutions to the many questions presented by these challenges. The World Alliance for Climate Change does. So it's we're going to mention the name a few times, but GreenSaharaProject.org is where you can go and look up quite a lot of information on this. And, you know, you can make a difference. Each one of us can make a difference. And I just want to commend these gentlemen on the call today for spending their lives making a difference, and we will see it in time. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome everybody. Thank you for coming on. And James, I guess it was good if we start with you to get us started on our explanations today.
All right. Well, since 1972, you know, I've actually been concerned about what's happening to our planet. You know, we had the crises for oil and gas and things like that. So that kind of interested me. Now, today, like you said earlier, YS and Ali are integral parts to the keys to what we're going to do in the future here for the health of our planet. And it struck my interest when I saw Ali Kavadi, his methodology for coal to fertilizer was very, very interesting to me because it deals directly with waste product. Something that we associated with dirty can become a clean purpose, a paradigm change for it, which brings out the best in humanity, the best in agriculture practices, and the best in how we use these together. So what I'm looking at here is creating this avenue of change. Of course, we know world population's increasing. The governments will have to deal with that. What we're dealing with is the planetary health aspect of our world. And industrialization, pollution, food products, and resource depletion, these are all exponential in their growth because population grows. You have an exponential, you have to grow these products more quickly and more of them. So the ability of technology to increase the resource availability, it's only linear. It's only something that can be done so fast. So we're running into these planetary boundaries, which are causing us our problems. We're cutting down too much forest. We're cutting down, and we're not replacing. So that creates imbalances in our atmosphere. Our atmosphere can't deal with it quick enough. Where does it go? It goes into the ocean. So when it goes to the oceans, it causes problems and imbalances. So everything is interconnected, and everything is rocking the wrong way. So I would like Ali to explain his methodology to us and how it will work with nature, coal as a fertilizer, and the development that we're going to meet the needs of the present. So you can go ahead there, Ali, and explain your aspects there.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me in your very valuable radio show. I would like to very quick use this opportunity to wish everybody around the world a Merry Christmas and also a Happy New Year. About this, I just want to tell you that I have been working for agriculture as engineer agriculture for 25 years before I become a professor in university to teach typically and theoretically about plant nutrition and stuff like that. So actually, I work in many different parts of the world, especially the area where the agriculture and farmers are facing very difficulties with environmental stress like drought, salinity, pollution, and so on. So the problem around the world is that since 1930, where the chemical fertilizer have added to farmers to in terms of increasing crop production, at the beginning of this last century, the farmers or they were very happy to see that how fast the plant grows, and also they can achieve the money or financial achievement for their crop, for their business. But in case, as I always mentioned it in my home, lots or many proposals and or many projects that I am writing and also proposing is that Theodore Roosevelt in 26th of February 1937 said that a nation that destroys its soil destroys itself. I always mention it and also
makes
follow
sense.
This means, yes, very great statement where happened about 100 years ago, where the people were not really thinking about their soil, just getting crops and stuff like that from them. So there came the idea that, okay, after about 80 years, at the beginning of last century, I mean this century, beginning of 2000, the farmers start to see, yes, and observe that the soil, farm, and garden are getting more destroyed and more salty, and since over then they observed that, yes, we have to change something. I think something like chemical fertilizer is destroying the soil, but they know how. But so they, you know, the farmers traditionally they use the manure as an organic fertilizer, but you acknowledge that organic fertilizer has a limit resource, like animal manure or poultry manure, or also some forages like that. So you cannot find this kind of the organic fertilizer around the world, everywhere around the world. Of course, in North America, we can find it because of the huge amount of the animal sector, stuff like that. But 80% of the world, this kind of source for organic fertilizer is very limited. And important, besides this, we have to mention it that as a scientist, we have observed so many artificial chemical like hormones, enzyme, and also antibiotics in the animal source, that it makes the difficulties and also dangers to use this organic fertilizer for our field. So the farmer for enforce and control a very huge thing. In the one hand, they should add something to their soil to boost their fertility. But the other hand, the source, the organic fertilizer that nowadays is in the market is polluted by heavy metal, by antibiotics, by anything like that. So what we should do? I was thinking that, okay, we have to find another source for that. Something that really farmers get easily to approach it, and also make the plant also happy, and also increase the production of the crops. So, I have been working with beneficial microorganisms in the world. Since when I was a PhD student in Germany, Technical University of Munich. So on the team, we were working with several types of microorganisms, which are contributing to plant to absorb unavailable elements like unavailable phosphorus, unavailable nitrogen, unavailable potassium, which is huge and tremendous amount of this. You can find it in soil, but plant cannot use it because it's unavailable formation of the chemical form. So I work with such a microorganism which help plant as a symbiosis, in the symbiosis way, to produce better and easily formation of chemical for plant, so then plant in the return get this kind of microorganism, sugar, which both of them become happy and growing fast. So besides this, we're thinking, okay, what kind of microorganism really we can find around the world? When you look to the historic soil history, we can find that this kind of beneficial microorganism were so much in the soil of the world before the industrialization comes, and after this industrialization revolution, this beneficial microorganism getting loose and loose and loose from this plant. Actually, we have this kind of microorganism in the world, but we have to find it and also again reverse them, rescue them in terms of getting endangered and also vanish from the plant. So came to in Germany, we're thinking about what kind of organic fertilizer we can produce without any this condition, any of this chemical in industrial chemical pollution, like heavy metal, like antibiotic, and also some enzyme. So we came to the idea that yes, the coal could be one of the best, a huge amount of this coal we can find around the world, everywhere, in North America, in Africa, in the area that coal is. So, but the problem of the coal is when you use this coal for plant, it's not immediately absorbed by plant. So plant will get a problem and even die if you put the coal for just as a fertilizer for plants. So we got an idea that we have to give it them in process. Provide some process in this coal which release unavailable minerals like phosphorus, nitrogen, and potassium to the plant in the form of availability, in the form to be easy. To be easier uptake by plants. So we came the idea that yes, we can use this microorganism to provide this process. So we came further. Yes, yeah.
But I'm just wondering, Cole, I mean, as a layperson, the coal versus dirt, how does it have nutrients in it? Because dirt, I can see having nutrients, but then with everything you're explaining, makes sense where it's all been depleted and ruined. So how does? But I just on the element side, does coal have nutrients or no?
Yes, coal is like a piece of cake for a plant.
It is.
So you know, lots of elements, huge of carbon elements, like zinc, copper, iron, anything that you can think. But depend on coal mine, the geological perspective. For example, in North Ontario, in Canada, here in Canada, there is a coal mine which is mixed with some heavy metals. But in some part of the world, there's some coal is not mixed with heavy metal. It's the heavy metal which is in the coal, existing in the coal, is the level of they're not dangerous in the level of secure level concentration for plants, so it just doesn't matter. So I always tell to my students, yes, coal is like a huge, piece of cake. But the cake that you cannot eat it at once, you have to take it pieces, small piece of that, microorganisms that we work with is. Provide this like
well then it, when it mixes when it mixes then it still doesn't deplete itself like after like the dirt would or but anyhow I'm just curious it's kind of okay
absolutely this kind of thing that you know the plant cannot absorb it immediately of this kind of elements like micro and micro elements in the soil. So then it is a role of the microorganism to come over and cut it like a knife and provide it for plant. But this process is a little bit long, but not very that long at that view we expected for years. And if you give this kind of coal to the plant, it needs at least four or 5 years to keep the coal. In terms of become better and also available for plants. But our process is very short, maximum 2 or 3 months, provide coal in a form that plants can observe it easily, and also adjust the pH, because in pH it's very important for plant. In certain pH, many elements can be absorbed by plant. But if you don't have optimal pH for plant, even you have a huge amount of microelements around the plant cannot absorb it because of the pH adjustment. However, we came to the idea that we make this idea as a idea that we can use it for whole planet. Yes, because then you don't need to have a dirty manure that nowadays is spread around the world, mixing with heavy metals and also antibiotics and so on. So this is the idea that we had, and we already work in several area around the world. We use it for farmers. They are happy for that.
Wow.
With that, and so hopefully in this project that we are doing together with the gentlemen, we'll be using this kind of technology.
And so the coal miners will be really happy. The whole business
Actually, it is win-win-win, because it's win for farmers,
right.
Win for tax payer, and also win for the mine owners. So the North America, here in Canada, the Ontario, most of the coal mines is shut down because of pollution and their policy the government have against the global change. So in return, the mine owners can use this. Yes, then use this for fertilizer. Yes. Yes.
Natalie, if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is basically interject a little bit.
Yes.
James have the vision of cleaning up and have better relationship with the stewardship of our planet, the planet health. Our group, basically, what we are trying to do is, for us, I believe education is the key to help
Absolutely.
Ourselves. So we have access to the technology. We have access to the goodwill. So we are reaching out to the rest of the, people that listeners or whoever wants
yeah.
to participate. So we are actually, organization right now is a platform so that we can connect with people all over the world. For example, I already have made arrangement with a number of coal miners worldwide. They are interested to participate. So as soon as we are able to replicate the technology from one location to another, we want to help others to help themselves. We want to empower them with the
That's
knowledge
amazing.
And the experience
yeah.
that we have, so that they can do something about it, so that we can have a cleaner, a more healthy environment, for so that we have a fighting chance. Maybe we can slow down the global climate change. So this way, it's a win-win situation for everyone that participates. Unfortunately,
between the coal and the forest and the tree, it's amazing what you're. Well, how does the coal, for example, like you know how with coal mining and where they use it in furnaces and things, and you get the dust, and that dust gets in the coal miner's lungs, and it's not good for them, right? So how does that work when it's put in the ground? Is it like extracting the minerals that are good out of the coal, or is it just like what is it mixed with to
yeah.
do? I'm
okay.
just really curious.
I can tell it. Yes, our microorganisms provide a protein called glomalin, which is like a glue. So as soon as the microorganisms start to process coal mine to become organic fertilizer, this kind of protein produced in the released in the soil, so the particles become coming to coming together, accumulating together, so like a glue. On the other hand, so it doesn't really make emit them as an erosion or erode them to the water or the air, but on the other hand, provide the huge amount of humic acid, which is a source of protein or organic matter in coal mine. So
Ali,
big point.
Do you mind if I try to explain in the layman's term, because not everyone is technical.
Yeah, we need layman's terms. So we need layman's terms today, terms so that
okay.
everybody can explain it to other people easily. Thank you, sirs.
So this is where I come in. Basically we add additional material. It's a process. We are not actually using the actual coal itself, but it's the tailing. The tailings are a byproduct from the coal industry. Actually, they usually are considered toxic material because they contain a lot of heavy elements. So what we
in
do
the coal,
is
you
we
pull, you but,
in the coal tailings. The tailings are usually a byproduct. These are because they are toxic material. The coal miners doesn't know what to do with it. So the burning process and all that, those are separate. Okay, what we are working with are the leftovers. Okay, so what happened is that we use some fungi, which is mushrooms, as well as as well as microbes, which is found naturally in nature, because the fungi mushrooms, they are the ones that actually can consume these toxic material and break down into food that green plants can use. So it is not a simple solution, but it is a roundabout way of going about. So and we add additional ingredients depending on the type of location, the type of raw material that we need to work with. Basically, what Ali does is that he also studied the what is lacking and what needs to be subtracted or add to it, so that depending on where it is being used and what type of temperature and what type of plants we are planning to use. So this way, it's just like a vitamin supplement. You study it, and best is let the doctor prescribe the prescription, so that you have the maximum effect. Does that make any sense?
So is it burning it? They burn it, and then they get the tail out of it, or is it part of when they're busting up the coal?
No.
It's end pieces of it.
No. You don't. As I say, the burning part is a separate a part altogether.
Right.
These are coal tailings. When you process coal, these are the byproducts, the sort of the leftovers. And right now, they just store away, and they do not know what to do with it. These are what you call tailings. So as a result, we are using what is left over. These are toxic material nobody wants to touch. But we go through our process and convert them into organic fertilizer.
That's fantastic.
Okay. Brilliant.
So,
and then the mushrooms, I can see how they mix, but then you could use other things that are similar, right, that would mix, that could do.
Correct.
Huh.
So, Ali, you want to add something?
Just wonder, the coal mine around the world is, if you go to the coal mine, you can see the three types of the coal. So one of these is with 4,000 calorie, that which is you can sell it. The second part is also a little bit low calorie, which is also not very expensive, that a mine owner can also sell it. But the third one, which is a huge of that, it's lignite, which is huge of carbon. It does not burn, and the mine owner does not know what should they do with this. So Norm basically
right.
they back again to the mine, so to deep inside and cover it with the normal soil. But this is mainly it's and also when you talk about of the ash also is a very important part of the resource of our resource, because in ash you can find elements, micro elements that you can you don't need to add later in your fertilizer, like a potassium. So in this case, huge amount of mine tailing can be used for different. And also very interesting is that most of the world have also this kind of coal mine in their own resource.
All over.
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing, totally amazing.
Yeah.
So basically, what we are trying to do is that, as I say, we are trying to educate people. Literally, right now we are using garbage left over from coal mining process, convert that into something that literally plant can use. So we are solving a couple of challenges in one process. Not only we can get rid of the toxic material, but we also have it convert into organic fertilizer. And as a result, we create local jobs. We have organic fertilizer to grow healthier food that can be locally consumed. And one of the things that we introduced to this organization is that we really need to get off the open loop economic system, which is what do I mean by open loop? Is when you go to any supermarket, you see some of the produce that have traveled halfway around the world just to get to our table.
Right.
The carbon footprint on for shipping and the plastic that it got packaged into. You use it once and you throw them away. So this is why right now we have more plastic in the ocean than fish. So our closed-loop environment system means that we encourage people to shop and grow locally so that it doesn't have to be travel so far away. And we try to reduce the plastic, reuse as much as possible. So it's a win-win for everybody. So not only we are educating, empowering individuals with the knowledge, but we also provide the tools, the experience that we all accumulated so that the next generation have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
That is why this is a win-win-win for all people that participate.
Totally, yeah. Exciting.
Yes. The interesting thing is the plant also has a system to detoxify the pollution in the soil. So it means when you put, and you have, imagine that you have a source, coal mine, with heavy metals, which is, it's polluted. So when we add this system, we provide the system, the plant microbe interaction, which always we use this term, provide a detoxification process to conjugate or change the system or change the toxic formation of the compound to not toxic in terms of using some enzyme, some process, some mechanism in the soil. And the final end point or final result is that the soil is out of the toxic elements, and also the form of the toxic chemical form of the toxic after the process become detoxified become safe compound. This is one of the things that we're always working on. That, you know, because some people would say, and when I was working with different part of the world, they would say, okay, you know, Ali, we have a coal here, but it's mixed with, for example, with oil, or it or it's mixed with very heavy metal, toxic heavy metal like arsenic, cadmium. What are you going to do with this? So I would tell yes, our system is really provide. I mean, the detoxification process for kind of coal mine, which at end of the day, the product is away or free of any toxic heavy metal, toxic or oil, or any toxic compound. Yes,
that would be great.
That right there is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I'm wanting to inject a little here. There was a report about 31 years ago. It was made in 1987. It was known as the Brundtland Report. And it dealt with what we're facing today. Industrialization, growth, pollution from that industrialization growth, food production problems, resource depletion, which is our soils. We're getting thousands of tons, say like an hour, are going into these conditions of depleted. So this methodology couldn't have come at a better time to really restore our failing soils and restore our confidence as people. I thought about this, you know, and I said, this is incredible stuff because it's going to really give hope. Not only were we doing it in Sahara Desert, we were growing trees. We've got the quadrats going. You know, Dr. Steyer over there is doing his thing there. And he's getting the initial water from the Atlas Mountains. So we're using nature as best we can as a resource, and we have to continue to think of ways to do things like this. Ali, I commend you. You're great. You know, you get a Nobel Prize out of this, I'm sure.
So, you know, very fortunate. You know, you the soil or in the human history, which is always make me always concerned. The soil is always ignored in the human history. Always ignored soil. So the thing that nowadays, you know what, an important thing is that as long as farmers and as long as the people see that the production is comes without any problem, they don't care anything about the soil. But as soon as they say, yes, this, the product and crops is getting, less and less every year, the production of every year getting less and less, and the next step to this, you see that the soil is getting more dirty and not productive. So now they come to the idea that figure out, yes, we have to do something. You know, the pest, 100 years ago, such a pest that we have, fungicide, pathogens that we have right now in the whole world, which is attack to the plants, is not like before. Why? Because, why? You know why? Because the chemical fertilizer produce a very easy food as a substrate to the plant, which is very easy to be available for a pest or fungi or pathogens. But before, 100 years ago, organic fertilizer released this elements or humic to the plant slowly, which was not easily available, usable for pests or pathogens. So look at this. Besides to produce, increase your production, increase your health, soil health, increase the ecology, you also do not use a huge amount of pesticide, herbicide, this kind of chemical stuff, which is really harmful for our health. This is something that...
Absolutely.
Right.
You know.
You know, I would think, I mean, I know as far as the U.S. and then other part, you know, all around the world, you know, the governments and many, you know, they'll give credits or tax credits or when things are brought in. I would think that on the public side and governmental side, it wouldn't be too hard to maybe give the farmers credits and businesses and other ones credits that use, you know, go this way rather than, you know, I would just think that with grants and monies there may be ways to work on that end too, to get people to see the difference, you know.
Yeah. Yes. You know, the petrochemical industry, this is a huge thing around the world that provide lots of money for environment, for government, but the government doesn't really get their eyes in on their products. So imagine that some countries that they don't have anything about oil, but they have huge 10 or 20 petrochemical factories in their country. So imagine in Turkey. So I was in Turkey. Turkey
terrible.
Does not have any chemical, any oil, but they have about 8 big petrochemicals, so which is produce lots of pesticides, herbicides, also chemical fertilizer. So this is our problem. So, but interesting thing is the farmers is getting now, aware. The farmers are now seeing and figuring out that how the chemical fertilizer is really damaged their soil. So last time when I was in Turkey, some farmers came to me and said, you know, Ali, I don't want to have any chemical fertilizer anymore. Even despite the chemical fertilizer increased my production, my crops, but I don't want it anymore because the soil, my soil is getting dirty, my soil is getting salty. So many things that just coming like that.
I want to ask you a question, that everybody on the line. What do you all think about GMOs? Because I'm against them, but I'm a layperson. I don't like the idea of us reconstructing the food the way they're doing it. But what's your take on the GMOs?
GMOs are not necessary.
No, not necessary. Because I already work as a in my career. I work as a genetic engineer to see how it's going on. But I am also against GMO. Is a huge has a huge problem to the soil. You know, GMO plants also exudate or release some hormones or enzymes to the soil, which also pollution. So one of the things. So in my idea as an agriculture engineer, I would tell you that we have enough resource around the world that we can also produce food for twice or three times of the pollution that we have. But if we really use our resource in a good and correct way.
Yes.
Also, Natalie, what I would like to suggest is that GMO is another topic that we can spend another hour.
I didn't mean to sidetrack on it, but I would love to.
So, it depends on understanding. A lot of people are scared of something, but they never bother to take the time to understand what is making them so concerned.
Exactly.
Because people are afraid because of the unknown. So if one takes the time to understand the situation, then you can find a solution to address the problem. And again, that has to do with education, maturity, and understanding.
Exactly.
Yes, and getting to that educational thing. You know, if you're going to run for government office, you're not educated to deal with nature, you see? So we have to have the economies shift into a nature and a planetary health ideal thinking. We have to start thinking that way. And many are beginning to, but the shift isn't quick enough. I mean, you have all these people like the president. I mean, he doesn't even... he doesn't understand the implications fully that over generations it's getting worse and worse and worse. We're not talking about, tomorrow we've got an answer to it. No, we're talking hundreds of years from now. The people after us will have to deal with a lot of what we are creating with our economy principles today. So
they have to move to Mars, and that won't be fun. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Well, keep up the streak. Mar-a-Lago will be underwater in no time.
I know. Oh, my goodness. You're right.
Yeah. So them, they're not knowing, they're not educated to deal with nature.
Right.
So who's shoulders does that fall on? The science, the scientists, and not all of them are educated in the ways of nature. So there are good economists out there, but we need good naturalists now. That's the way I feel. That's
I agree.
Where we're going.
Education
that's
is so. I agree.
You know what? The other than that, you know, I just want to add something. You know, we all around the world, most of the people, they believe that, okay, it doesn't matter. The nature already recycle or recover the whatever we do, whatever we harm, the harm that we cause to the nature. But, you know, as I teach climate change and global warming, and I tell to my students that the harm that we do is, I mean, the recovery of the planet that is doing is 1.5-60% less than what we do in harm. I mean, the harm that we do it in this year, it will be recovered in 1.5 year later. But 100 years ago, it was about one year, and about less than 1 year. So imagine the idea that the globe, I mean, the earth, the soil will recover. It's whatever we do, whatever we harm to it, it's totally wrong this time. So we have to do
something.
We
need to realize that this little bit of damage isn't a little bit of damage. It's sequentially going to be major damage, right? And it already is.
Absolutely.
I remember one of the shows. James, you had mentioned one of the with the forest, just to give it in perspective, it was like so much was depleted in just the last 80 years, right? When you look at so many thousands, we need to stop.
Pre-industrial,
we need to get it.
Pre-industrial was at 6 million square miles. Now, that's 6 million square miles of rainforest. We now have 2.4 million approximate square miles left. So
that's
tells
only
you
like
the direction
100 years?
We're going.
That's terrible.
In 80 years. 80
yeah, I remember
years
before
that 8
year in 80, that's what, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's a huge amount, you know, and now we've got almost 8 billion people. So that's doubling almost like weekly. What I'm saying doubling, it's 200,000, say, births in a day out of 8 billion people. So that's, you have to start looking at these implications very closely and how we will mitigate these implications. We need to start this extremely quickly because it's going to exponential. It's going into exponential as far as the impact, the industrialization, the growth. We need more development than growth. We already have these infrastructures. So let's develop these, perfect them, and be better at it. Instead of growing more stores, growing more this, you know, it's just not a sustainable method. So I don't agree with the method we use today in economics, and whoever got the Nobel for it, sorry, I don't think you should have. That's all I can think of.
No, I agree. The UN, I guess, can get out and do more. Geetha Plakow has been amazing getting out to the social networking. I don't know if you saw the some of her posts and the videos that came out. They were awesome, and I've been forwarding them too. One was cute about the singing a Christmas carol with the plastic bags. I don't know if you guys saw that. Put it in the oceans and land, and you know, it's just getting the word out everywhere. And people, you know, it's amazing, right? Because we almost have to do it from social networking, scientifically, every which way we can, right?
And remember
I got my hats off. It was wonderful.
We're not blaming anybody. No, there's no blaming going on here. No government is being blamed. No public or corporations being blamed here. We're just bringing out facts that need to be addressed, and we need to make the changes. And if we work together,
I think we can
absolutely do it.
I agree. And I think a lot of people, you have such great win-win situations that help the economy, help the people, help the environment, because you do, unfortunately, we do have that money greed where, and not blaming people, but with lack of knowledge, and then them being afraid that they're going to lose their businesses or the environment, whatever, and there's without realizing that these things can be replaced, right, in a good way.
Exactly.
And I think
this is all,
you know, yeah.
This is all a win-win. This is all business as usual. Think about that. We're keeping business as usual. We're just creating more trees in another place that they won't chop them all down. You know, I mean, we're creating these trees so that it absorbs more CO2. And we're talking like 3.2 million square miles of trees after we're done. So that's going to be 40, 50 years from now. But it started, see? And that's the important part. Now with Ollie's patent and invention here, now we can grow it quicker. We can do things more quickly. And we can reverse the damage and the degradation.
Absolutely.
This is the important part.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
It's beautiful.
So
we are down to just like nine. We're down to 9 minutes. So I'm going to turn it back over for what you want to tell our audience. See, the hour goes by fast. I was saying to you, James, we could do a 2-hour show, but I know that's a long one.
You know,
we'll be happy to come back another time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The limits to growth were stated in 1972. In 1972, world population was addressed. Industrialization growth was addressed. Pollution was addressed. Give a hoot, don't pollute. What happened to that? You know, food production was addressed. Resource depletions were addressed. The planetary boundaries were brought into the limelight because there's problems. You know, these problems are not going to go away. And we can't just do it with money. Money's not going to do it. It takes a people change and a social change.
Exactly.
And the social thinking change. And we're fixing to come out with also stewardship principles, generations, for the 6 to 8 year olds. Me and Fonto are working on that. And that's
going
to be for those little ones. They're going to understand what our world's about at that age. They'll be probably PhDs by 14 years old.
I don't know.
But we need,
you
we
started,
need a lot
start
of
a program
that.
For that because I love it. That would be perfect. And you can teach them virtually, you know, do it. That's, I guess starting with the little ones, that'll change our lives, change the world, you know. They're not going to think, money matters so much. And, you know, all the money in the world doesn't give your health back, right? And if everybody's dying, it doesn't make any difference, right? Dying unnecessarily, I should say, because we haven't figured out how not to die yet, but unnecessarily, you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. Gosh, I tell you, I go, you know, I would say what I do for day to day, and I love people, and we want to serve and help, and then when we do this show, I'm going, oh, my gosh, I need to be doing more, and, you know, it's so, what you all are doing is so, it just gives me, I always get chills and goosebumps, because it's just so needed and so wonderful what you're doing, and
please thank you.
And I believe
we're going to
see it, we're
going to
see it.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely,
gonna
but we're going to see it, we're going to see it happen. Yep.
Yes, certainly will.
Absolutely. So where do we go? If people want to donate, they want to contribute, where do they go? Do they go to the GreenSaharaProject.org? Is it something that still needs to be set up as far as funding? I just want to see how people can, you know, because every little bit helps, right?
Well, it's going to be
a Green Sahara Project will be, .org will be a good starting point. From there, we are connected to the our virtual co-op. So we are all connected. So let's start with the Green Sahara Project. Org.
GreenSaharaProject.org or what?
Yes, GreenSaharaProject.org.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a contribution button on that site. I think George has still got it on there. I hope he does.
Yeah,
okay.
But anyways, they can go to the site, they
and,
can subscribe.
You know, for people who want to do more, they want to participate, they are welcome to leave messages for us, and, you know, we will get back to them. because
okay.
we like them to, even though we are, you know, we are virtual, if they are willing to help, we are, you know, interested to, and they're motivated, we are willing to give them the resources to make it happen.
Good.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Yeah, we want to get this out everywhere, too. It just, I'm at a loss for words as far as it just is just so much to do. So just
well,
action.
Here's another implication I can shoot out there to you real quick. I did a study on Lake Chad. The nitrate levels are 82%. Now, Ali can tell you, he's the scientist here. That's not good. Lake Victoria was at 72% nitrate levels.
Should
they be at 100%? Give us a gauge. Is it 100% is what they should be, or what?
The gauge is the nitrate levels are way high.
So they should be low.
Mean,
they should be lower, but much lower.
They should be lower. Absolutely lower.
Okay.
Yes.
8 to 8.7% maximum.
Yeah.
So you know the Lake of Ontario is it calls a death lake because of the huge of the phosphorus and nitrogen, which can leach from the neighborhood farming.
Yes.
So there is nothing that you can find in Lake of Ontario because of huge amount of.
Did you say 8% or 80%?
80%
in Lake Victoria.
No, what should it be? What should it be? No, what
I mean,
should it be?
Threshold should be 8% maximum.
Oh my gosh,
uh-huh.
that's amazing. That's
so
pretty
dead.
Bad.
So,
yeah,
oh,
it's
that's
dead
horrible.
Mm-hmm. So you can imagine.
Wonder
what
it is in areas where people are eating the fish, right? Where that fish has come into the stores. I mean, is that's pretty dangerous, huh?
Well, you know, though, that in the Lake of Ontario, you cannot find big fish. You know, it's dead. So since I don't know when, but the Lake of Ontario calls it the Death Lake because of this kind of huge.
Look,
yeah.
The lakes that we're talking about are the largest freshwater lakes in the world. Okay, Lake Victoria is a dead lake. Lake Chad is a dead lake. Lake Superior and Lake Michigan are becoming dead lakes. They're the largest freshwater lakes in the world, and they're dying. It should not even. We had 8,000 square miles off the coast of Louisiana. 8,000 square miles. Oh, all they reported was, it got a little bit larger this year. You know, like it was big deal.
Right.
It should not be there at all. You know, so. No, this is fertilizers that are out of control. I mean, its damage is unbelievable. So we need to start this like as fast as possible. And that's why we're here today talking with you. We want to get this out to everybody and get them on a purpose, a focus, and a direction. And we can't be fooling around. We can't make many more mistakes. As far as a species goes, I'm not trying to be any doomsday, you know, kill off all this going to happen all at once.
Right.
No, it's going to take over.
Right.
It's going to be a slow process, everything just starts shutting down. But it's coming, you know, so we recognize it. We're going
to
do something
about
it.
Yeah, it's like wake up. We have to wake up. Everybody's got to wake up and get involved.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely. It's the time to wake up. To wake up, really.
I mean,
well,
even
I
just
thank
sharing
you all for coming on today. We are. They cut us off after an hour. Oh yeah, I don't like that part because we have to go longer. But we have to have you back, and we're going to get out as much as we can get out there. And education's the key. You all are incredible. And
amen. That's right. Education.
So I want to thank everybody for coming on today, and we'll have to do this again, and we'll get involved more. And anybody listening that wants to get involved, you can also contact us, and we'll pass on all the contact information as well, and keep it moving forward. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
to
much.
Everybody out there.
Hi.
Happy New Year to everybody out there.
Happy
I wish
New
you
Year, right? Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.